From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2001 when Patrick O'Flynn earned the title of Monroe County Sheriff, and he has served as sheriff ever since. He's aiming to make it an even 20 years, the sheriff running for re-election this fall. His opponent is a man you heard on this program last month, former Grease Police Chief Todd Baxter. In that conversation, Baxter said he's running because the sheriff's office needs some serious changes. Well, as we always do on our program, we allow equal time for the candidates, and this hour, it is our chance to sit down with Monroe County Sheriff Patrick O'Flynn. It's nice to see you in studio, Sheriff. How are you?
Oh, Evan, great to be here, and I thank you for this opportunity. Everything's been going great. We actually, the organization has been absolutely fabulous. The people I'm able to work with, and that's what really drives you and keeps you really fresh on being able to enjoy the job you do. And I've absolutely loved this, having not only been the sheriff for 16 years, but prior to that, having been with the sheriff's office for well over 30.
Well, I'll tell you what I told Todd Baxter and what my son and I always tell police officers we bump into in the street. You know, thank goodness there are people like you who want to serve. And I know the community appreciates that. And I know you wouldn't be running if you didn't feel that you've done a job worthy of re-election. So let's start with what tops the list for you. What are you most proud of in your 16 years as sheriff?
Well, actually, where we've come as an organization, it's always been about the staff in our organization and the great work that they do every day. I've had an opportunity to go through and earn an education and have a degree in police science, have a degree in business. When I became undersheriff, I said, we've got a $150 million budget and over 1,200 employees. It's a big operation. And then I went back in 2011 and 12 and got my master's degree in Homeland Security from the Naval Postgraduate School. But throughout all that, it's being able to work with the community, work with the public, and have our staff just really shine. That's where I'm really enjoying every day, coming to work and looking at the many, many, many programs that we have in the sheriff's office that support this community.
What is the best part of the job?
Best part of the job is being able to interact directly with the community. That's the nicest part. Obviously, getting elected has got its challenges all the time. But being elected, you're able to do exactly what the community wants. You're able to do, if they come to you with a problem, an issue, a concern, you can directly impact their lives and make a difference. And that's the best part about the sheriff's office.
What's the worst part of the job?
Worst part of the job is like over this weekend when Officer Jeremy Nash, we got the call around 11 o'clock Saturday night, and immediately responded to the hospital, spoke with Chief Simonelli to see what he needed and to make sure that we were able to support him. Fortunately, we were able to send our SWAT team and at least 20 officers to be able to help their efforts in the investigation, be able to address the immediate concern with the SWAT team as support to the city SWAT team, and then to be able to take calls in the city and free up their people to be able to do their job.
You know, we see right now overall in this country, a national trend of, you know, for the most part, policing is safer than it was maybe a generation ago. It doesn't mean that it is a safe job. But I wonder, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it this hour as the hour goes on, there's a lot of discussions about law enforcement, police community relations right now. I'm wondering how you see the current climate now compared to when you were first elected 16 years ago.
Well, the level of violence has definitely gone up. Fortunately, technology to be able to support the efforts of the local police and the equipment that we have makes it safer. However, when you see it, as we did over the weekend, police being targeted. When I came on the organization, it didn't happen. It wasn't that any police-involved shootings, let alone police being targeted. Now you're seeing it across the nation almost every day. There's a situation. But we, as I said, we want to make sure that the public is getting the best service they possibly can, that obviously we encourage our people and provide them with equipment so they can be safe. But we're a public service agency, and we want to make sure that the public is our primary concern and who we're there to support.
How well do you know your opponent, Todd Baxter?
I've known Todd for years, as a matter of fact. I've worked with him in all of the different assignments and in organizations that he's worked with. I assisted him when he was chief in the transition over in Greece, And actually, we've even hired his son in our organization. And so I've had many opportunities to cross paths with Todd, and he's a nice person.
Yeah, he had some very nice things to say about you on a personal level, and he says his run is not at all personal, it's professional. Are you disappointed, though? I mean, were you surprised to see him running?
I was a little surprised because, as I said, we've crossed paths and been friendly over the years. But I'm excited and more than willing to run on my record with the sheriff's office and what we brought to the organization and to the community.
He was a registered Republican before he decided to make this run, and he says politics should not be part of law enforcement, that one of his goals is to take politics out of the office, and that who cares? He was a registered Republican. It's about the job that you do in law enforcement. Does it bother you at all? Should it matter that he was a registered Republican? Is that even an issue in this race?
Well, from my perspective, obviously I'm a registered Republican, but when it comes to doing the actual job, I've never had politics get in the way, and no one has ever claimed that politics has affected any of the decisions. We've done investigations of individuals in government, and have made arrests on Republicans and people in the Republican Party. So I don't feel that once you get in office, you obviously have to align with a party. To be able to go through the election process. However, once in office, we have never been political in this organization.
And I know it's kind of an academic question here because it's not going to change right now. It might not change for a long time. But once in a while you hear people sort of grousing or debating, should judges have to run for election? Should the sheriff's office be an elected position? I wonder how you feel about that. I mean, is that uncomfortable for you, or is that just part of the system?
No, as I said before, running for office, you obviously have to align with a party because of the way the system is set up. However, I feel that it's very important that the sheriff be an elected position. This way, I can do the job the way the public wants it done. I don't have to have a boss out there, a specific person who's elected, that's telling me how they want it done. We can make sure that the public gets what they need and what they want.
Listeners, if you want to call the program this hour, our guest is Sheriff Patrick O'Flynn, who's running for re-election this year. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Only fair to allow the sheriff to respond to some of what we heard from his opponent last month, and one of the things that Todd Baxter said convinced him to run was talking to people who told him morale was low in the department. Let's hear a little of what Todd Baxter had to say about morale in the Monroe County Sheriff's Department.
My interaction with deputies, my interaction with folks that know deputies, it's pretty much across the board. There's a morale issue, if you will. There's a lack of feeling like they're respected, and I don't take that lightly. I love cops. I love deputies. I love people that are willing to do that job. You know, it's a volunteer job. It's a great career, but at the end of the day, you got to be a special person to go in someone's backyard at 3 o'clock in the morning and clear that backyard of a potential prowler and know that might be the last move you make in the rest of your life. That takes a very special person. So the first thing we should do is just hold those guys and gals up with a whole lot of esteem, a whole lot of respect. You got to honor those people. And that's a leadership trait that I've always had across the board. You know, I believe if you take care of your troops, they're going to take care of most of all that stuff for you. They'll take care of the constituent.
All right, Sheriff, your response to that?
Well, as I said, I'm proud to run on my record, and I look forward to showcasing all of the people in the organization who bring such talent and the quality of the individuals that we have in the organization. I love to showcase them. And as far as morale goes, I definitely don't see that, nor do the individuals throughout the command staff in dealing day to day with everyone in the organization. I try to get around to roll calls, and we do customer satisfaction surveys for any time someone's had a call with us. We go back and check and make sure that they were treated right and what their opinion was of the individuals that came and provided the service. And the morale, if you use the standard guides for determining morale, are we seeing increase in citizen complaints? Are there excessive use of force? Is there people coming to work late or calling in sick. We don't see that. So as far as the morale issues, I don't believe that that is at all accurate. That's why I enjoy coming to work every day, is because people are upbeat, people are enjoying the job, and people are bringing a great quality of service to the community.
You think he's inventing that?
I don't know who he's talking to, but okay. I talk to the people every day, and I make sure that I loop back with a lot of the staff who are interacting with the frontline people that on a daily basis, and there is no indication of that.
Okay, and remind our listeners again, how many people essentially you oversee?
Over 1,100 employees, both, and got to remember that's not just the police bureau. That includes the jail, the court security, in the civil branch, besides the police, the most visible arm, which is the police bureau.
All right, let me grab our first phone call. And Henrietta, this is Chad on the phone. Go ahead, Chad.
Hi, Sheriff. My how's it going with respect to recruiting young people for becoming deputies?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. We we recruit on a regular basis, and we've had several different academy classes, both for the jail, the road, and the courts. What we do is we've gotten into the schools. We work very closely to try to have a diverse workforce, so it's reflective of the community that we serve. So we're able to work with the REOC, which is the Rochester Educational Opportunity Center, through the school district. We work with Unite Rochester, or cultural diversity groups. We also have a teen academy where we're really hitting the kids young. They're in high school, and we explain to them over a multi-week program all of what goes on to go through a police academy. Or it's actually a week-long program where the kids graduate and get an idea of what it is to be in an instructional environment. We also have a cadet program that works in the city school district to recruit and showcase some of what we do in the sheriff's office and have them have an opportunity to experience it. We have a trainee program at the college level, which actually I went through when I was in college, and it's a part-time internship type program. And then we even have institutional helpers that would able to extend beyond the trainee program, which is a two-year program, to be able to get into further higher education and still be able to be connected with the sheriff's office. So our recruiting efforts are broad-based, but we feel they've been pretty effective.
Chad, a follow-up?
Is it any more difficult today than it was 10 years ago?
The situations like what we saw with this latest shooting and stuff, I think it has an impact on people, not wanting to put themselves in harm's way, but we still are very fortunate to be able to get very quality people coming into the workforce. We obviously have civil service, which is a challenge in the way the system is set up. But we're getting hundreds and hundreds of people applying for, maybe 20 jobs in an academy process, 25 to 30.
Because I'm a local judge, and I see it. I see you guys have the most difficult job in the world, and I think to attract young people to it, it's got to be a real challenge. Okay, well, good luck to you.
Thank you, Chad.
Thank you.
Yeah, right now, Sheriff, you mentioned efforts to make sure that you have a diverse force. How far along do you feel like you've come with making sure that especially in the policing department, that you have a diverse force that sort of reflects the community you serve?
It's always a challenge because there's a pool of people that all of the local police agencies are drawing from when it comes to minorities. And so it becomes a challenge, and sometimes the people would prefer to work in a certain area over another area. So you end up having transfers go on. But we've been very happy with the fact that we've been working with, as I said, Unite Rochester is through the Gannett organization, and being able to touch people directly. We use a lot of the faith-based programs, getting into some of the local churches, and have them support us in developing the rapport to encourage people to come into the field.
All right, let me grab another phone call. We got to Nick in Gates Chilai. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I just wanted to first express much respect for exactly what the job entails and everyone who's out there doing it right now. I just wanted to ask, what changes have you made recently in response to the opiate epidemic and the heroin crisis?
Nick, thanks for the phone call. It's a great question. Let me back. Thank you, Nick, because let's work through opioids broadly. So I want to start when we'll get to exactly Nick's question. But let me back up and ask you, compared to whatever was sort of the, I hate to say it's kind of the drug crisis of the time, but there are sort of phases that we move into and out of in the community. You go back 16 years, you know, how much has changed when it comes to opioid? How big is this problem?
The opioid problem is very, very big in our community. And it isn't just, you know, where people think, oh, inner city or one location in the county. It really has gone through every suburb. And, you know, some of the concern is from doctors over-prescribing. People, and what we've seen on several serious cases has been that a person will get a sports injury, be prescribed the opioids to address the pain. And then once their prescription stops, they look for other opportunities that they can afford and often turn to heroin. And then quality control on that is terrible and oftentimes mixed with fentanyl now we're seeing.
When you say quality control, by the way, what you're talking about is the actual purity of the heroin, and sometimes it's mixed up, it's cut with other things?
Cut with everything from rat poison to now fentanyl, which enhances apparently the high that the individual gets. However, easy to overdose on, and this is where we've been using the naloxone, the Narcan, to be able to address it. We've assigned to or provided Narcan through a state program to all of our employees on the patrol. And even in the jail, we have the Narcan available because what's happening, it used to be when we first started to notice the increase in the opioid use, it would take one administration of the Narcan. Now you have to do two and three because the drugs are getting that much more potent.
All right, so it is a big, big problem now. And, you know, so to Nick's question, you know, what else can be done here? Let me just ask you, broadly speaking, you know, are you satisfied is the wrong word because nobody wants a drug problem, but are you feeling like, you know, the department is doing everything that it can on this?
At this point, we're working hard. We've got an opioid task force that we work, you know, through the district attorney's office, county executive's office, and trying to address from not only an educational standpoint and bringing parents in to let them know what to look for, but also from the enforcement side. And then we're also working, especially in the jail, on the treatment side to make sure that people that have been addicted to opiates have the best chance to reenter back into the community after they leave our facility. We've been looked at as a national leader in this area when it comes to addressing drug and addiction problems. And we're never satisfied. We always keep pursuing and looking to new opportunities to be able to treat and support our treatment providers in the community. But, you know, at this point, we're working hard.
Your opponent, Todd Baxter, was a little critical on this issue. He said that the deputies are clearly working hard when they encounter these problems, essentially out in the community, but he thinks the leadership could do more. And I want to listen to some of what Todd Baxter had to say about what he thinks could be done regarding heroin.
We're a law enforcement agency. The people selling the dope, we need to go after them. The people selling the dope that kill other people, just like they did in Gates, I thought that was a phenomenal move. We're going to go after them for murder charges if we can, or homicide charges. We're going to make a statement. If you keep on selling people dope and it's killing people, you're going to go to jail as long as you can.
All right, so he's talking about tougher penalties, making a statement in that way. Sheriff O'Flynn, what do you make of that?
Oh, we're constantly working with the legislature to see how we can be more effective in making sure that the people are safe out there, and that if you do violate the law and you do get involved with selling these opiates and other dangerous drugs, that that you're taken off the street and kept and not provide or present a problem to the community. So we've been working that in that regard. But as I said, it's not just a enforcement situation. It's just not just a legislative. It covers the treatment and then being able to try to get the education for the young people so they understand and parents understand the dangers and how prevalent it is so that we can maybe stop it from that front too.
Does this compare to any other drug problem you've seen in your 16 years as sheriff or even going back to your time as undersheriff and before?
Yeah, this has been the most, as far as the community having, you know, understanding the concerns and really the number of deaths that have been related to this heroin epidemic. I mean, in 2011, there was, you know, maybe 10 or 11 heroin-related deaths. It over doubled in 2012. And then from 29 to 68 in 2013, in the communities around here, and then in 2014 there was 95 heroin related deaths. So you see this incredible progression of just from heroin and the fentanyl. It's been really unbelievable.
Where do you think it's coming from?
I mean, we're hearing it's coming from China is a big place, especially the fentanyl. You know, we're obviously working with the federal, state, and local enforcement agencies, both the local police and DEA, and even working with the FBI for some of the intelligence to be able to try to track more closely to see if we can stem it coming in. However, it doesn't seem to be something that's going to go away very quickly.
Yeah, when I talk to people who work in drug counseling, their concern is that addiction to heroin and opioids is so severe that it's very, very difficult to get clean and to stay clean. And I'm curious to know how you feel about efforts like drug courts in our community. We see them in various counties and places, Yates County, here in Rochester, of course. How do you feel about drug court?
Well, we've been working strongly with the drug court for years now, mm-hmm. and the veterans court, which is essentially a drug court for veterans. And I just was at the last graduation, and you know, you have hope that there is going to be, you know, a lasting effect based on diversion and getting people into programs to be able to prevent them from just coming to jail. You know, we've dealt with the issue in jail. We brought a lot of different drug programs to try to turn the tide so people don't just come back in through the door all the time and the recidivism being very high. We've also worked on Vivitrol, which is a drug that's administered, and we work through Huther Doyle, which I'm a board member over there, to have that administered as the person's exiting the jail. And what it does for a 30-day period, it takes away the effects of the opioids to be able to get them on the straight and narrow and not have them fall back into the drug environment. And we're hoping that with all of these new programs that it will have an effect long term.
Our guest is Sheriff Patrick O'Flynn, who's running for re-election, first elected back 16 years ago in 2001, and you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We'll get back to your phone calls after our only break of the hour and talk more with Sheriff O'Flynn about why he's running for re-election this year. It's all coming up on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, is Parcel 5 really a done deal? Rochester City Hall has selected a performing arts center for the future of Parcel 5, and the chairman of the Rochester Broadway Theater League tells us it is a done deal. They'll raise the money. It's time to get excited. But a growing grassroots group says it's not a done deal, and they want the community to think a lot harder about this decision and to maybe get involved to stop it. We'll talk to them next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My guest is Sheriff Patrick O'Flynn, and I should mention, because he's running for re-election, sometimes I forget the incumbents have websites too, and that's not fair. The website, if you want people to learn more and read and see much more about you, Sheriff, is what?
My campaign website is sheriffoflynn.com. It's a pretty easy one to remember.
Sheriffoflynn.com. Let's get back to your phone calls. Tim in Pittsford. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan. I hope you can hear me. My phone is terrible right now.
I got you. Yep.
Okay. The jail deputies, are they under you, Sheriff O'Flynn?
Yes, sir, they are.
Because you talked about morale before, and from what I've read, they've been working without a contract. Is that correct as well?
They have, yes. And in fact, we're working very closely with them, as we did with the Road Patrol, and hopefully we'll be able to get that settled in the near future.
How long have they been working without a contract?
They've been without a contract for maybe 3 years now. The negotiations after the Road Patrol contract went to arbitration. Everyone was waiting for that decision, and the decision was terrible. We were astonished that a arbitrator would take away individuals a significant amount of their retirement benefits. So then the other unions decided to regroup and then figure out to start negotiating, and that's what we've had more recently is the road, the jail, and the court security units have now all come to the table.
So do we think that this is going to get wrapped up soon? Because 3 years seems like an awfully long time to work without a contract, and it seems like a very, very challenging job, one that I could never do.
No,
I'll listen offline.
Thanks, Tim.
Oh, okay, thanks, Tim. No, we're definitely hopeful. As I said, we've had extensive conversations behind the scenes. This isn't something that you want to do in public as far as going through negotiations. But behind the scenes, we've been working very hard, and we're very optimistic that in the near future we'll be able to get a contract for the jail team.
All right, back to the phones we go. Thank you, Tim. This is Jane in Rochester. I'm with Sheriff O'Flynn. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, I'm really curious about this opiate addiction thing. I don't know much about it, but I do know that we've been told that we have a lack across the country of good psychiatric care, and that what usually happens instead of the long-term talking out things and that sort of therapy, that often a drug of some sort is given. So it sort of gets people in the habit of, I've got a serious problem, I must take something. Even the doctor says so. So I'm going to throw that out there. But I just want to ask an opinion about, is this really self-medication from people? Is it the fashionable thing to take, peer pressure? And I unfortunately had a younger sister that got into drugs. And bless her heart, she was schizophrenic and just lurched from one crisis to another. And she died at the age of 40, supposedly of heart problems. But in her case, it's as though you could not talk to her. And all she cared about was that next fix. And she was in a great, great deal of pain and just didn't, I don't think, ever get the right treatment. So would you comment on the treatments available and just what motivates such a numerous number of people to turn to that particular type of drug? Thank you very much.
Jane, thank you for the phone call. I'm really sorry to hear about your sister's story. But let's start with the motivations. Sheriff, is there a general idea that that any one thing or another, or is there a prevalent reason that people turn to opioids or heroin?
Well, as I said, we've seen overprescription is some of the problem. Obviously, availability of a street drug like heroin is another opportunity for people with an addiction to quickly access. However, what she just brought up is such an incredible problem that we face on a daily basis in the jail, and that's where my hat goes off to all of the members of the jail bureau for their ability to deal with people's problems and issues. What we see now is with the closing years and years ago of so many mental health facilities and providers in the community, that people end up coming to jail. And I've talked to the heads of the R-Ring wing over at Strong, and they said that, and in fact the head of the R-Wing has said it on many occasions, that he's the number two mental health provider in the county, and the jail is number one. And those challenges for people that are facing not only addiction but mental health issues, it's co-occurring problems is a real problem, and she hit it right on the head. Now it's a matter of, as we said, we're trying to address it on many different levels, many different fronts, but it is a challenge that we face every day.
On the subject of what's going on in the jails, I think that's a good time to give the sheriff a chance to respond to one more comment that was made by his opponent in this race. Todd Baxter on this program said that the jail is one of his biggest priorities, that he thinks that more could be done regarding, you know, the sort of what kind of a revolving door. Let's listen to what Todd Baxter had to say about the issue as he sees it with the Monroe County Jail.
The common denominator of most of this violence and most of this disruption that's occurring in our community would be that most of these people end up in a Monroe County jail, you know, whether they're victims or suspects in criminal activity in the future. Most of them have been incarcerated, and we know that. It's called the revolving door. That's not Todd Baxter. Todd Baxter, take these things and let's see if we got a common place that we can work. And then where do we get our collaborative partners in there? There's social service agencies. There's nonprofits out there willing to do work to take care of our incarcerated folks when they leave the jail. And it could be that progressive step out. It doesn't have to be just go out. It could be go out and you already have a job. It could be go out and you already have stable housing. It could go out and we have a case manager tracking you with your probation officer or whatever it's going to be. And we're held accountable. We're measuring those things.
Okay, Sheriff, why don't we respond to some of what you just heard there?
He's obviously not familiar with what we do at the jail. And we've got over 50 programs that work on transitioning people and reentering back into the community. We have follow-ups with a lot of the outside organizations. We also have everything from faith-based to community engagement to self-help, legal assistance for civil issues and for accessing Medicaid and those programs to make sure that they get the medical services they need, HIV awareness, STD awareness, Alcohol Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, vocational programs, everything from horticulture to food service. We try to make sure that the inmates are the most and best prepared to be able to go back into the community so they don't come through the revolving door that he had just mentioned.
Is it working?
It is in a lot of ways. I think that we've seen a lot of success. We just had a graduation that I was at for Rochester Works, which is a reentry program that assists in developing resumes and ensuring that the individuals have the best opportunity to be able to go out and stay out. And we work with everything from veteran housing and housing for individuals and being able to access that whole program. When it comes to Rochester Housing Authority, we work with them because it's a challenge for someone coming out of jail, not having maybe the highest level of education to be able to understand all of the systems and how they, so we make sure that they are put in touch with the people that can give them the most benefit. So now there's a lot going on a daily basis, and that's why I say I'm so proud of our staff, mm-hmm. not only for the individuals that are in uniform, but the rehabilitation staff and all of the individuals that work with inmates on a daily basis.
All right, see the phone ringing again. We'll get back to your calls in one moment here. Let me just follow up and ask you, because I think some of what your opponent was saying was even with the programs that are in place, we need to do more to tie them together to be coordinated so they can work more together. In other words, I think he's saying we need better results. And what the sheriff is saying is that he thinks the results have been, we've seen some improvement, but do you think there could be more coordination, or is that something your opponent just has wrong?
No, there's obviously you can have more programs, and whenever I'm out at a training seminar or not, and one of our staff is goes to different conferences and such, we ask them to bring back any program, and we are constantly making changes, modifying, and enhancing the operation. So it's not something that just stays stagnant by any means, and we're proud of the fact that we come up with new innovative ideas. We're looked at as the number one sheriff's office and number one jail in the state. And on a national basis, I sit on the major county sheriffs, which is the larger counties across the country. We sit in the large jail network, which is the bigger jails when you include L.A. and all the bigger counties from down in Miami-Dade. So we look at what they're doing, and we stay pretty much in stride with what the best and the brightest are doing across the country.
When you talk about that rating, by the way, that rating according to whom? New York's the best in New York State? Or?
New York State Sheriff's Association. People can call them. Okay. They are constantly coming and asking us for what's the latest and what are you guys doing, and we're very proud of that.
All right, back to your phone calls, and this is Al in Greece. I'm with Sheriff O'Flynn. Go ahead, Al.
Hi, Sheriff O'Flynn. I voted for you last election. But it left a bad taste in my mouth. And I know some other voters that right after we elected you, you then asked for a very large raise, which I know you didn't get, but you didn't come clean and tell people that before we voted for you. And if you had it to do again, would you handle that differently? And I'll listen off the air.
All right, Al, thank you. It's the sheriff's favorite subject.
Yes.
Everybody loves talking about money. No, but you know, to be fair, though, this is the position that you wanted, and everybody knows the salary's out there. You did ask for a raise, so let's talk about it. So, first of all, he's saying that you hid that from voters last time, and you brought it out after you reelected. Is that fair?
That's not fair at all.
Okay.
the thing is I've got elected in 2001, and I was it was 14 years without a raise out of the 16 I've been. Sheriff. No, it was something that I was always aligned with the judges and such. And then a political change locally severed me from being there with that. But as I said before, it's never been about the money for me. I could have retired when I was undersheriff. I had 20 plus years, could have retired and then taken two salaries. My retirement income plus the salary for sheriff, totally legal. I just didn't feel it was right to double dip. So I never did. So it's never been about the money for me.
Even the asking for the raise, but for, set the double dipping aside, and I understand the point you're making there. But you're asking for a raise then. What was that about? If it wasn't about the money, what was it about?
It was about the fact that it was 14 years without a raise at all and that I was falling behind my staff, as far as the base salary and benefits, it was going to be almost impossible to recruit somebody from inside to say, you should look at maybe becoming sheriff someday. So that's the frustrating part, is that it was falling behind. And still, the salary doesn't go to top pay until 2023 or 25. So it's not that this big salary and people are commenting on the size of it. It's been, as I said, 14 out of 16 years I've been sheriff with no pay increase.
And this is a free chance for you to tell me if you think the media has covered this issue poorly.
Absolutely. They're one-sided and very poorly as far as looking at and talking the whole issue.
Okay. Oh, see, he's looking at me with a smile. That's a fair question. And we can take the sheriff's criticism there. No, I appreciate that, and I know it's come up a lot. And Al, thanks for the phone call. I bet you the sheriff appreciates a chance to clear up his side of that. Let's talk about a few other issues here. So, let's talk a little bit more about your record when it comes to safety in this community. When you meet people who are sort of on the fence, they know you, they know your opponent pretty well, given his profile in the community, and they're going to base it on what they think is first and foremost about public safety. What would you point to that says, look, I've got a track record that is all about public safety, and this is what I hang my hat on? What's, give me that list that you, sort of your door pitch when you talk to people.
Oh, absolutely. For over 20 years, we've seen an actual downturn in violent crime and crime overall in our community. I'm very proud of the work that we do. And as I said, that's not just going out there and the patrol cars going and responding to crime. It's also the education and public awareness to let people know exactly what is going on. So with the downturn in crime, people I do think feel safe. And as I said, I'm more than happy to run on my record of where we are across the board in every one of our bureaus. And we've been working hard at it. We've been using programs like CompStat, which on a monthly basis, we meet and look at what are some of the trends going on. And we work with the Crime Analysis Center, which is countywide. And we look at being able to address problems and coordinate very well with all of the local police agencies. We've got a great relationship, and we're very fortunate in this community because we're unique. There isn't turf wars like you see in other communities. As we had with the Officer Nash situation, we seamlessly provided our staff, and they were able to step up and give the RPD an opportunity to address their issues, and we could take the calls for service, we could support their SWAT team, we could do all of that. because of the great working relationships we all have here.
All right, Sheriff Patrick O'Flynn is my guest. His website is sheriffoflynn.com. Is that correct? Did I have that correct?
That's correct.
Sheriffoflynn.com.
Thank you.
He's running for re-election this year. And let me get a couple of listener questions. And Gary wants to know, what are the sheriff's thoughts on a civilian review board similar to where the city is headed?
Well, it's an excellent question because fortunately for over 20 years now, we've worked very closely with the Center for Dispute Settlement. And what they do is they look at our internal affairs cases, any complaints that we get, they provide a civilian review. They send in a team of people, look at the investigation, make sure that it meets the community standard, and then we get their opinions as to how the investigation was conducted and if they agreed with the findings. So we already have a citizen review board in place, and it's worked very effectively.
Okay. Gary, thanks for that question. Andrea wants to know if you've been following the Philando Castile case and if you think the jury got that one right. Listeners, that's the case, I think, in Minneapolis, where a gentleman was a licensed gun owner. Concealed carry, licensed gun owner, and was stopped and told the officer who stopped his car that he had the gun on him, wanted the officer to know. The officer said, don't grab it, don't take it out. He said, I'm not. He went to take out his identification as the officer instructed, and the officer fired 7 shots into the vehicle, if I had that right, and Philando Castile died from that. And the officer said that he was scared, that he had smelled marijuana, that he was scared for his life, and that he reacted based on that fear. And I think Andrea wants to know if you've been following that case and if you think the jury got it right.
I haven't been following that case closely. I did have the information you just had there. I don't know all of the detail as far as the officer's perspective and such, and that's usually the critical turning point when it comes to an investigation as to what did the officer see and what was his perspective as the situation unfolds. Obviously, this is a terrible, unfortunate situation that our heart goes out to the victim and their family when it comes to a shooting situation like that. But I don't know what the jury, how that was presented, and what evidence they were basing their decisions on. So it's a tough one to make a call on.
Speaking more broadly, National Review Online, which is a very conservative publication, has said that they think there are two things that are important coming out of that case, speaking generally. Number one, they think that the political left, generally speaking, is not respectful enough of how difficult and how, frankly, how imperiling police work is. That there are officers out there with lives on the line every day, and that there needs to be more of a respect for that. They also said that the Philando Castile case shows that there needs to be a toughening of standards, that it can't just be an officer says, well, I was scared. Because the legal standard is a reasonable fear that a reasonable person would have, but juries are often said, well, the officer said he was scared. Well, what was the reason that the officer was scared? And in this case, you have an acquittal. So National Review is saying, we've got to be respectful of the danger, but we can't just say, well, the officer said he was scared. That is too loose, and that unfortunately did not work well in this case, and it wouldn't work well going forward. Do you agree with those sentiments that in general, that obviously I know you're going to say absolutely, on the first point, police work is dangerous. We every one of us should respect that. But they're concerned that this whole, well, the officer said he was scared, he pulled his firearm, it's too loose a standard. What do you think?
I think in order to get a conviction and such, I think that you have to have a standard that's pretty tightened up to where you can't just say, oh, I was scared. Mm-hmm. I agree with that end of it. But I think what you find in any of these officer-involved shootings, we had one with a young female officer in our job, and the training that they receive is very specific. They obviously they're told about officer safety and be cognizant of safety issues. But also the other evidence that they are watching and articulating, and that's what we were able to see in the situations that we've had, is it isn't just, well, I was scared. They are also saying, this is what I saw. This is what I perceived. This is how it appeared to me. And so I think if you're just saying that they can say I was scared and that should be something that lets them off, I don't feel that. I agree with you on that.
Okay. Back to the phones. Wendy in Rochester next with the sheriff. Go ahead, Wendy.
Hello, this is Rosie.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Wendy.
Hi.
First of all, I might have your name wrong. That might be my fault. But go ahead.
Okay. That's not important. Sheriff, I want to applaud you for how knowledgeable and informed you are about the opioid crisis, because I think that is the key to getting past this whole epidemic. And I wanted to know if you are making efforts to ensure that every inmate is fully educated about the opioid crisis. I'm aware of an initiative in Albany where not only are they educating every inmate, but inmates who have a history of any opioid use, they are leaving the jail with a naloxone kit. So that's one question. And I have one other question, and then I'll get off the phone and let you answer. At a time when there's so much racial division, especially in terms of attitudes about towards law enforcement, I saw a picture recently of, and this was just last year in 2016, end of 2016, a graduating class at the Sheriff's Department. There was not one deputy of color, and that just struck me. I was so upset by that. And I know that you spoke of the efforts that you're making. I know about the difficulty. But at the same time, what are you specifically doing with the deputies that you have under you to ensure that they are culturally sensitive and culturally educated and making an effort to mend this divide? Because one of the things that I don't see happening is law enforcement policing their own as effectively as they could, because that's an epidemic too. This division, when law enforcement, and I had law enforcement in my family, it really upsets me when officers behave badly, putting my family member at heightened risk because they're doing wrong. So if you could share specifically what you're doing to address that, and do you plan on giving naloxone kits to inmates who may get out there and die, because we know their risk is exponentially elevated when they've gone so long without using, and then they hit the streets and they think they can use like they used to. Those are the ones who overdose.
All right, Wendy,
thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you
for the work you're doing.
All right, thanks very much. Sheriff, let's do the naloxone kit first of all. Just a brief answer on that one. Go ahead. Yes, we work with families to make sure that when we transition people out, that they have access to all of the things. And as I said, we work through the private sector, working with Huther Doyle and others to make sure that they understand, have had the education. We do that education component inside the facility, and then we work with providers outside to make sure that they have the best opportunity for success.
Okay, and when it comes to cultural sensitivity, I think what Wendy's saying is that she wants to see more diversity, and to the extent that you're working towards that, what about the officers currently on the force? Are you helping make sure that they are culturally sensitive as they're training and that kind?
Absolutely. That's all part of the academy process. So it's not only the sheriff's office, but it's the law enforcement officers across the entire county. That is one of the big key training components that we have, and that is to understand cultural sensitivity and to make sure that they understand ways to be able to address people so they feel comfortable in dealing with the police.
Okay. Let me grab Bill's in Hilton. Bill, we're running out of time, but Bill wanted to ask you, what do you think is an appropriate term limit? Well, that probably brings a smile to your face because maybe in 2001 you wouldn't have expected to be in this position this long, but the community keeps reelecting you. How do you feel about term limits?
I feel very fortunate that the community still feels very comfortable with the leadership that I've provided and the team and the organization that we've developed. As far as they did make term limits for political positions, so the county executive's position, the legislature positions and such, all are term limited. However, the sheriff's office, they consciously made a decision not to make that term limited, in that you're bringing a level of experience, professionalism, and trust from the community into the process. Because after you run for office, during that process, you really end up being apolitical and just addressing people's needs and making sure that everyone's treated fairly.
All right, 30 seconds. We heard that there's some parole, that local police chiefs in particular have asked for some help with parole. They want more information from corrections, and they want more authority for their officers to jail people, to incarcerate absconders on this. And we're getting word today that we could see more of that. Gary Craig writing about that in the Democrat and Chronicle. Does that impact your department?
It will, as far as the, you know, possibly the number of people coming to jail. However, our vacancy sign is always open. But we look to work closely with parole to be able to enhance programs to provide safety for the community.
Well, I appreciate you being here, and it's sheriffoflynn.com to see more and learn more about his record. But the sheriff is a pretty well-known person in this community, running for another term, and certainly I know our listeners appreciate it as well. Thank you for being here, Sheriff.
Well, thank you, Evan. I really do appreciate this opportunity.
Sheriff Patrick O'Flynn, our guest for the hour. All right, short break, much more connections coming up next.